See, spiritual awakening or enlightenment is about the discovery that we don't just have a human nature and an animal nature. We have a super nature, which means there's another dimension of who and what we are. That is a kind of spiritual essence, a kind of super essence. And by super, I don't mean in the sense of like Superman or superhero, but I mean it's a super nature in the sense that it radically transcends the constraints of our human nature, of our ordinary nature. Meaning it's not bound by the same rules that seem to govern our ordinary human nature or potential. It's a leap beyond human life as we know it, human consciousness as we know it, human nature as we know it.
Welcome to Meditation Changes Everything with spiritual teacher Craig Hamilton, a podcast exploring the deeper potentials of meditation practice and how it can change every aspect of human life. In today's episode, Craig explores what may be meditation's greatest promise, the remarkable discovery of our superhuman nature. We're all familiar with the idea of human nature. It governs our behavior as individuals and as a species. But is there another dimension of who and what we are that, once revealed, can empower and free us to live an extraordinary life? In this episode, Craig explores how the discovery of awakened awareness in meditation can unlock our most profound human potentials in ways that mere effort alone will never touch. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the show. Here's Craig.
I want to speak today a bit about our nature, our human nature, who and what we are. What is a human being? What's operating in us? How does this whole thing of being human work? So we're all familiar, of course, with the idea that we have human nature, which means that we have a set of natural tendencies of kind of predictable ways of being, ways of relating to situations, ways of responding to the world around us, to each other, to life. And although, you know, people have written about human nature, and some people will say it's one thing is part of our human nature, some people might argue that, you know, when you ask anyone to describe our human nature, they'll probably tell you that on one hand, it's our nature to try to be good and do good. We have it's in our nature to take care of each other, to be altruistic, to be self-sacrificing when necessary, to be heroic even at times. It's our nature to strive toward our goals and work hard for them. It's our nature to be innovative and creative, all these wonderful things about human nature. And on the other hand, all of us would probably say, yeah, and it's part of our human nature to avoid change, to fear the unknown, to mistrust the other. It's our nature to be self-interested, to put ourselves first. It's our nature to seek pleasure and avoid pain at any cost. And under the worst of circumstances, it's our nature to cheat, to lie, to even be violent and destructive. and many other things. So our human nature includes all these wonderful tendencies toward the good, a lot of tendencies that we would all agree are not so good, and many things in between. And now, thanks to modern science, we've realized that we also have an animal nature. That's kind of part of our human nature. We've realized that we're animals who evolved from other animals. And so we understand that we have this kind of primitive nature. We have raw instincts that we share with other animals. We have a fight or flight mechanism in our brain, in our biology. As we've studied animal behavior, we've come to see that, in fact, even a lot of our kind of what we would consider our higher human nature is also shared with other animals. Many of our social instincts, the tendency to bond and connect with family members and be attached to them and to take care of them and even signs of altruism from different animals. And certainly, you know, the more complex, intelligent mammals and birds share a lot with us, and we're understanding more about that all the time. So to some degree, it's kind of demystified the complexity of our nature to realize, oh, okay, this has a deep, enduring, you know, background in our biology as animals for eons of time. So this whole idea of human nature is, you know, to boil it down, recognizing that some of it's very biological and parts of it might be, you know, we don't quite share with animals. We have aspects of our higher nature that maybe we don't are unique to being human, or at least humans and maybe a few of the other very high animals on the kind of intelligence spectrum. But when we just boil down human nature, you know, for most of us, we would kind of say, well, okay, we have our good parts and our bad parts. And certainly one way of looking at the spiritual path would be to say that the spiritual path is about learning how to strengthen or develop the better aspects of our human nature, what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. You know, to learn to listen to those better angels, to be guided by them, and, you know, metaphorically speaking, you know, these higher potentials. And that the other part of the spiritual path would be learning to let go of, to leave behind, to renounce the lower aspects of our nature, the negative ones, the destructive ones that I spoke about a few minutes ago. And so we could, through one lens, just say that's what the spiritual path is. It's the movement, it's the evolutionary movement from our more primitive nature toward our higher potential for to be a more evolved species who is increasingly manifesting the better aspects of our nature. And I think that's a reasonable way to look at part of the spiritual path. I think it's that kind of work. We could say, whether you know, some people would even say everything I just said there isn't even spiritual. Why do you need to call it spiritual? That's just the human endeavor. That's the great human project of evolving human nature, becoming kinder, less violent, more compassionate, less selfish. And I would say I agree with you. I don't even think we have to call that part spiritual. That's just the endeavor, the great endeavor of uplifting who and what we are. But we could also call it spiritual, and that's reasonable too, because it has components of that, and that's certainly a big part of what spiritual teachings have always guided us toward. But when we're talking about spiritual awakening or enlightenment, I want to highlight that we're talking about something a bit different. So spiritual awakening or enlightenment has always been held up as the ultimate goal of the spiritual path, or the, you know, really the meaning of life, the ultimate potential for our for a human being, is this radical awakening, this profound enlightenment, this great liberation. And so when we're talking about the endeavor to awaken or become enlightened, see, we're no longer just talking about trying to, you know, be less bad and more good, and trying to struggle with our human nature to manifest the better aspects and restrain the worse aspects. See, spiritual awakening or enlightenment is about the discovery that we don't just have a human nature and an animal nature. We have a super nature, which means there's another dimension of who and what we are. That is a kind of spiritual essence, a kind of super essence. And by super, I don't mean in the sense of like Superman or superhero, but I mean it's a super nature in the sense that it radically transcends the constraints of our human nature, of our ordinary nature. Meaning it's not bound by the same rules that seem to govern our ordinary human nature or potential. It's a leap beyond human life as we know it, human consciousness as we know it, human nature as we know it. The supernature has been called different names in different traditions. It's been called our Buddha nature, our true nature, our divine essence, our true self, many other terms. But all of it points to the recognition that who and what we are is not only the part that we've come to know and learned about and experienced up to this point, but there is a completely different dimension of who and what we are that radically transcends, that is a profound leap beyond the human being we have until now known ourselves to be, and human life as we've taken it to be. Now, the reason it's important to recognize that it's such a radical departure, or it exists on such a different level, is so we don't relate to it like something else that we need to work to try to cultivate or grow and develop into. See, if we're just looking at it on the spectrum of our ordinary human nature, where we have our, you know, our better tendencies and our, you know, not so good tendencies, and we're just trying to restrain or inhibit the bad parts, and we're trying to amplify and enhance and support the good parts. It's all something that just exists in this realm of effortful self-cultivation. Effortful self-cultivation. Okay? And we're all used to that. We all do lots of that, hopefully. I'm sure we do, because people who get interested in anything like this are doing a lot of effortful self-cultivation, self-improvement, self-development. And it's all good. Well, most of it's good. Hopefully it's all good. And so we have a tendency when we come to spiritual awakening, spiritual enlightenment, to then try to relate to that in the same way. Okay, this is something I need to effortfully cultivate. But this supernature that we're talking about isn't something we gradually cultivate. It's the whole point of it, of referring to it as part of our nature, is to acknowledge that it's already here. It's a super nature that already exists, fully formed. And it's something we just need to uncover. We need to remove the obscurations to it. We need to make room for it so that we can see it, so that we can know it, so that we can experience it, and then ultimately so that we can manifest it, so we can allow it to take over our life, to take over the steering wheel, to begin to live this life that until now we thought belonged to me, this separate, skin encapsulated ego with my goals and dreams and ambitions and fears and history and traumas and story. I thought it was my life. But when we realize we have a super nature, a super self that would also like to live our life and would probably do a much better job of living our life than we ever could with all the constraints of our ordinary human nature and struggles, then we become interested in trying to get out of the way so that this super nature can start to show up, make it all work. So another reason I'm calling it a super nature is that this dimension of who we are already contains a set of what I've come to call super capacities that are far beyond our ordinary human capacities. And this is something hopefully all of us here have at least tasted, if not experienced in depth. Look in your own experience for a moment and if you think about the moments of your life when you were most awake to this higher nature, most available for this depth to show up and or having the most potent experience of being propelled outside the limits of your ordinary self into a deeper, wider, more expansive experience of self and life. Did you notice that you suddenly seemed to have a whole set of capacities that weren't there before, weren't there even an hour before? And by this, I'm not talking about superpowers in the sense of, you know, that you could suddenly fly or read people's minds or move objects with your mind or those things. You know, again, maybe some of that happens, but not what I'm pointing to specifically here. What I'm pointing to when I talk about these super capacities is there's a kind of sudden ability to see directly into situations, to see the motives of other people, to see the things that might go wrong, and to see the opportunities that exist, a kind of natural wisdom capacity that starts to emerge that seems to be very intuitive, but also rational, but it transcends the rational. And it seems to have access to a kind of field knowing that's in tune with the group and the collective and the situation, and this kind of very precise, rapid responsiveness that comes from that. That's one kind of capacity. We may have experienced a kind of inner strength, a sudden inner strength or resilience where situations, in difficult situations that would normally really throw us off, now don't throw us off. We are able to, you know, encounter them, deal with them. It doesn't mean we might not feel uncomfortable, it doesn't mean we might not feel pain or hurt or any other thing, but this natural, deep inner strength and resilience that's just there as part of our deeper nature. We might find a kind of profound capacity to care, because often our capacity to care and love is limited by how big we can make our heart. You know, we feel limited that if we care too much, we're going to be overwhelmed. We're going to be overwhelmed by maybe our inability to deliver on all the care we feel, or to express every bit of it. Or if we do express it, we might have opened ourselves to being hurt. And so we often feel Like we can only care so much. But in this awakened consciousness, our heart is as wide as the universe, and we're able to care infinitely. There seems to be no limit to the ability to care. And we find a kind of creativity, an innovative kind of creativity that seems to be just part of our consciousness, an ability to just have all kinds of creative responses to salute to situations, to problems, as well as inventiveness and coming up with new ideas. It's like, where does it all come from? It didn't come from me. Suddenly I just feel like I'm a conduit for this creative flow and flow and impulse. We find we have an enormous kind of sensitivity in our consciousness, sensitivity to others, sensitivity to ourselves, sensitivity to context, the context in a situation. We're very attuned to it. We're very sensitive to it. We feel it, which gives you a sense of appropriateness, inappropriateness, what's going to be helpful or beneficial, what's not. We're suddenly feeling on a much deeper, much more sensitive level everything in life. And we find a kind of adaptability, where we're able to adapt very organically and quickly to changing circumstances. You know, the rigidity that we may have experienced in ourselves previously seems to have melted away and been replaced by a fluidity, a flow, a responsiveness, kind of dancing with life as life keeps changing moment to moment. The point I'm making is, see, any of the qualities I just mentioned, you could put on the list of things we want to improve about ourselves. Is you could say, well, those are all just, you know, some of the better aspects of human nature. And I agree, we should all work on being more that way. Craig, you just gave a good list of how we should all try to be more wise, caring, resilient, strong, intuitive, creative, you know, sensitive, adaptable. We should just all try to be more that way. And we probably are all trying to be more that way. But the point I'm making is that, and we can all be more that way. I mean, we can work to be more that way. But the point I'm making is, what if all of those remarkable capacities that really transform our way of being, they transform our experience of being alive, and they transform how we're able to show up in life. What if all of those were the natural qualities and capacities of the deepest part of yourself? And that rather than trying to work to cultivate them all a bit at a time to become better, all we had to do was find the key that would unlock the door to this deeper dimension of who we are, this deeper dimension of our, this super nature that we all have, all human beings have. What if it was just about getting the key that would unlock that door so that that super nature could naturally manifest and express itself in the form of all of these super capacities? Wouldn't that make sense? Like, even if this sounds like a stretch to you because you haven't experienced what I'm talking about, doesn't it make sense, given what we are, given what, just think about human beings at their best, given what we are able to do and manifest, doesn't it make sense that we have these naturally extraordinary beings, these naturally super beings, that that's really our true essence, that's really our true natural potential, and that what's really going on is that it's obstructed, that our natural super nature, our extraordinary potential is actually right there, but it's been obstructed, it's been obscured. By what? By our animal nature, by our human nature, by all the tendencies and habits of ignorance that we look at and explore on the spiritual path, by ego, the ego structure, the defense mechanisms, the cognitive biases, all the things that work together to weave a veil that obscures this deeper super nature. So this is the great promise of spiritual awakening. This is the great promise of spiritual enlightenment, and it always has been. This isn't a new idea. This is a new scientific spiritual idea. This has been the essence of the spiritual path for millennia. Has pointed to what I'm trying to unpack here, and I'm saying it's a perennial truth, and when any one of us does the work to remove the obscurations or shift our attention in such a way that we awaken to our supernature, our true nature, we find that the floodgates open to this completely different possibility, this super possibility. Now, even having said everything I just said, I know there could be a tendency for us to think about it, you know, since I'm describing it as a super nature, to kind of still to think about it kind of as, okay, there's this part of me that has super abilities, my, you know, to still have some version of the Superman metaphor where I just have to learn how to go into the phone booth and take off my office clothes and lo and behold, I'll be in my my Superman suit and all my powers and ready to go. And so I just want to really make it simpler than that and more human than that. Because the reason, so I just listed a number of what I was calling super capacities, described them. But what I want to say is the reason they exist, the reason that those super capacities are the natural kind of the natural expression of our supernature, of awakened consciousness, is because when we awaken out of the gross ego structure into this higher nature, this true nature, what we find is that we are just, we're just relating to life differently. We're relating to our mind differently because we see things differently. So we're perceiving life differently, and therefore we're relating to it differently. And because we now have a different relationship to this experience of being alive, then our capacities shift in shift as a result. So when I say a different relationship, I'm going to get specific. So what I mean is are things like when you're awake to who you are beyond the mind and ego, when you're awake to this deeper, higher consciousness, the way you relate to the workings of your mind, your thoughts, changes radically, doesn't it? The mind, from the point of view of awakened consciousness, the mind meaning thought stream, is now no longer seen as reality. Like the stories your mind is telling you are no longer seen as reality. They're just constructs. They're just stories. They're just pictures that your mind's taking and stories your mind's telling. And you're no longer what's called identified with the mind. When we're awake, we're not identified with the mind. So we relate to the mind very differently. We're free from the mind. Whereas in unawakened condition, our thoughts tend to dominate us, they torture us. We, you know, very often feel, you know, like overwhelmed by our inner critic or overwhelmed by other critical voices inside and voices of doubt and voices of fear and voices of greed or, you know, impulsiveness, all kinds of, you know, this the conditioned mind tends to dominate and guide so much of our life. When we're awake out of it, it doesn't. We just see the mind for what it is. Oh, it's just this story-making machine. It's just this interpretive machine. It's not necessarily accurate at all. It's not telling me the truth necessarily at all. I'm much more circumspect about my mind. I'm not so interested in everything it's churning out. So we discover freedom from the mind. When we're awake, we relate to our feelings differently. Whereas previously, often we're very at the effect of our feelings. If we feel good, We're going to show up in life with a good mood and a good attitude and be effective contributor to life. When we feel terrible, we want to just crawl in a hole and withdraw from life and not fully show up, and we feel kind of crippled by our feelings. And certainly, if not that extremely, we're just in reaction to feeling. You know, we're conditioned. We have a conditioned, habitual relationship to feeling. So we feel certain feelings that trigger certain behaviors, have other feelings that trigger other behaviors. This awakened consciousness is free from feelings. Meaning doesn't mean it doesn't feel. We feel everything as we've explored here, but we're no longer at the effect of them. We're no longer in reaction to them. We're no longer identified with feeling. We're identified with consciousness, which is much bigger and free from all that. When we're awake to our true nature, we're relating to time differently. We relate to the past very differently. We no longer, you know, we're not feeling burdened by our past choices. We might be freely learning from our past choices, but there's not this sense of being living under the weight of our past. We relate to the future differently. We're no longer looking to the future as the time when we're going to finally live, when everything's going to be just right and we can be happy and full because our circumstances have all worked out. We've let go of the dream of a future and we're fully here in this moment, investing everything here and now. And we, of course, relate to challenges very differently. We don't relate to them as we're not afraid of them. We're just available and responsive to deal with them. We relate to opportunities and higher possibilities differently. So the bigger point is that we become non-reactive and free from conditioned habit. We become open, receptive, intuitive, responsive, and we start to live our life out of a natural trust and in a kind of attunement to this deeper flow. So we seem very fluid and free. And it's out of that that those higher capacities I talked about just flow naturally. Because they're really the natural way for us to be. They're our natural state. Once all the conditioning, habit, reactivity, identification with thought, identification with feeling, once all of that has been gotten out of the way, has been removed, then we naturally function in this extraordinary way that starts to look a little bit like superpowers. It starts to look like super, you know, super normal. But my point is it's not, I wouldn't see it as supernatural. I would see it as utterly natural, our deepest nature. So I'm bringing this all up for two reasons. One, just to again orient us to what spiritual awakening is, what enlightenment is, what this path, what any spiritual path that's designed to awaken us is really about, what it's really pointing to. So that we don't orient to it in a different way, so we don't make it smaller, so we don't make it something we're just trying to cultivate. We always remember, no, I just need to get out of the way of this supernature so that it can come through. I need to make room for it, which maybe means I need to, you know, remove my attention and cease to participate in the energy and momentum of unconsciousness so that I can participate in the energy and momentum of superconsciousness. But as opposed to trying to force myself to be super conscious or trying to force myself to act in a way that's super conscious, I need to let this natural process occur. So I need to cease to participate in that which is unnatural. So I said I did this for two reasons, but I think I'm just naturally going into my second reason. So the second reason, though, is that in light of everything I was just saying, is that this really allows us to underline again what the practice of direct awakening is that we're doing here. The core premise of this approach is that we don't need to wait for spiritual awakening to happen to us. We don't need to do a set of preparatory practices to try to get ready for some big moment of awakening when everything will shift. That in fact, because there is an awakened relationship to our experience, there's an awakened relationship to the mind, and an enlightened relationship to our feelings. There's an enlightened way of relating to the future and the past. There's an enlightened way of relating to consciousness itself. That because there are because awakened consciousness functions in natural, predictable ways, it is therefore something that we can practice in meditation. We can practice relating to our experience in an awakened way. And when we practice relating to our experience in an awakened or enlightened way, we are inherently aligning ourselves precisely with our super nature, with our higher nature. So therefore, we're making room for that super nature to show up and do the practice. Because see, from one point of view, all the practices we do here, your mind and ego can't really do them. But when you, the conscious self, the person, chooses to do a practice of direct awakening in meditation, you're basically creating the invitation for that super nature to show up to really do the practice, because it's the only part of you that really can. So this practice of direct awakening, what we've really done is sort of taken all the natural attitudes or qualities of awakened consciousness, of our true nature, and said, what would it mean to practice that? How can I, in meditation, practice that? How could I practice not identifying with the mind, not grasping on to knowing, not participating in the endless compulsive need to know and be certain, and the identification with thought that comes. How could I practice not doing that? How could I practice not reacting to my feelings? How could I practice not waiting for a better future moment? How could I practice giving my attention to consciousness itself, awareness itself? So that's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing in these practices. And that's what we're going to keep doing. So we're going to keep going deeper and deeper into the practice of direct awakening, exploring the natural qualities and dispositions and tendencies of awakened consciousness as ourself in meditation.
This podcast is supported by our paying members in Craig's Awakened Life membership program. When you join the Awakened Life, each month you'll receive in-depth teachings and guidance in the practice of direct awakening, including a meditation workshop, 4 guided meditations, and a live online retreat with Craig. And when you register today, you can receive your first month for 50% off. Go to awakenedlifemembership.com to learn more and enroll. If you enjoyed today's episode, we hope you'll share our show with others. And please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to your favorite shows. If you have a minute to write a short review on your podcast app, we would deeply appreciate your support. You can stay connected to the show by subscribing to our newsletter at meditationchangeseverything.com. Each week, we'll send you new audios and videos from Craig, and we'll also let you know when we release new episodes of the show. If the approach to meditation we've been exploring today inspires you, you are invited to tune into a 90-minute online workshop Craig will be hosting called Meditation 2.0, The Miracle of Direct Awakening. In the workshop, he'll share a powerful new approach to meditation practice and guide you in a series of brief meditation experiments so you can experience it for yourself. You can listen to that at freemeditationworkshop.com. That's freemeditationworkshop.com. Check out our show notes for links to all the ways you can stay in touch with Craig's work. Meditation Changes Everything is created by Craig Hamilton, Susan Fries, Mason Ewald, Stephanie Murphy, Will Bowman, and Richard Klein. From all of us, thank you for tuning in.